We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the boss.
I call shot like a boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
I got that.
Good evening and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss, and next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. And we're sort of excited here in studio because just before the show began, Carla put gloss on her lips, which means
it's my pre-game routine. I'm ready to go.
She's ready to go, and we're ready to go because it's a big show, a big week. Lots is taking place this weekend. It's going to be an exciting weekend for college football.
USC Utah about to kick off.
That's a big game, USC Utah.
Pac-12 championship game.
You, of course, the Trojan, rooting hard. And you guys are the favorites, I think. I think it's going to work out well for you, at least in my head.
I hope so. They're trying to avenge an October 15th loss in Utah by 1 point. I mean, Kyle Whittingham, I mean, he has coached them up so physical. It's going to be a tough game. Even though the records are vastly different, 11-1 versus 9-3, it's still going to be tough. It's going to be a grudge fest.
So championship Saturday this weekend, great outcomes coming up in college football. And then, of course, the NFL is always engaging, always exciting. And one of the headlines this week, of course, is the return of Deshaun Watson to Houston, Texas.
There we go. And it would be a lot better if the Texans had a product to put on the field. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe they're going to surprise us.
Texans, of course, worst record in the league, poised.
0.136 winning percentage. I just want to point that out.
They are
0.1.
For those who don't know, we broadcast from Houston, Texas, and so we try to avoid the Texans as much as we can. They are on a hard track toward getting the number one pick overall in the draft, and they certainly need the help. Maybe Bryce Young will be their quarterback next year.
Poor Bryce Young. That's all I can say. The other good news is that as a princess of darkness, at least the Texans make my Raiders look like they're on the way to the Super Bowl. So let's have some positive thoughts.
Raiders
there.
With a couple wins in a row.
Yeah.
Rising quickly
back to back.
Here.
Don't know what to do with that.
Well, next segment, we're going to have Jerome Solomon join us. He is the longstanding columnist for the Houston Chronicle. He knows all things Houston sports. And we're going to ask him what it will be like when Deshaun Watson returns to NRG Stadium to play against the Texans this weekend. That'll be great to hear from Jerome and great to hear what kind of fan reaction he gets. There will be 10 women who were his victims who are coming to the game.
With Tony Busby, the attorney.
With Tony Busby to say, we are here and we want to be remembered. So it'll be Jerome Solomon up next, and we'll ask him about Deshaun Watson's return to NRG Stadium. That up next here, you're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio.
Football Friday with The Boss and the Gloss continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Boss and Gloss, Sports Map Radio. And joining us in studio now is Jerome Solomon. He is a senior columnist for the Houston Chronicle, probably one of the premier voices on Houston sports. Jerome, great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me in. Clearly, you guys have run out of guests and scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We had to ask for King Solomon. It didn't just happen.
We want the king, King Solomon. So let's begin with this weekend's events. Deshaun Watson, after his career with the Texans, is now playing for the Browns, coming home to NRG Stadium. What kind of fan reception do you think he'll get?
Oh, it's going to be ugly. I would expect, for the few fans who show up. I mean, we are talking the Texans here, so they don't come early, and there haven't been a lot of them coming this year at all, frankly. But I think there will be a crowd there for this. It's an event for the strange reasons that it is, but it is perhaps the most interesting thing that's happened at NRG this football season.
That
so,
is true.
Which is a
sadly
sad statement. But it is an interesting return, and there will be 10 women who were accusers of him, who will be there to say, hey, we're still here. We want you to remember us. We want you to remember what happened. And then there will be boos. How will Deshaun handle that?
That's one of those interesting questions. Like the thing that made him a really good football player to this point in his career was he's always been able to be focused on the game.
And
compartmentalize, exactly. Erase all the distractions, deal with loud crowds. I mean, he played at Clemson, so the place was packed.
He played Alabama.
He won a state championship in high school, so he knows how to win. He knows how to deliver. He started in middle school, and he was the best player on the team, and so he's always dealt with that. Now he's dealing with something that's self-inflicted, mm-hmm. something that's really personal, something that should have hurt him, should have rocked him to his core, because he had put out an image of being something that clearly he's not. Mm-hmm. And so how do you respond to that? How do you, you know, how do you recover from that in a sense is going to be fascinating to watch, because he did it to himself, and he's going to deserve all of the heat that he gets from wherever the fans give it to him from. Even if opposing players take cheap shots and jokes at him on the field or something, I'm like, well, you did it to yourself. And yeah. So I frankly don't know how he's going to deal with it. It could crush a person. It could really make you not be the player that you normally would be. And also, he really hasn't played in a couple of years either. So,
well, that's the point I was going to bring up, Jerome. It's been 700 days since his last game. His last game was January 3rd, 2021. Mm. And so I think that, yes, all the factors y'all talked about are very one-offs, and this is what he's got to deal with because of what he did. And when he's dealt with a lot of distractions, as you said, and a lot of vitriol, you know, playing against Alabama several times and in the bright lights at Clemson and then mm-hmm. again at the high school level and all that. This is different, though. That was about his ability.
That was all
football.
Channel
your ability and say, right. I'll take that and show you. But now his character has been in question. I mean, it's not even in question. His character is damaged, and he's got to deal with that. But it really seems like Cleveland very much believes that he's going to be able to move on because they've given him the richest contract in NFL history with mm-hmm. a 5-year, $230 million fully guaranteed contract. They believe in him, and his locker room believes in him. So I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to see. I think your point of the fact that the Texans can't seem to fill NRG this season or really much of last either will be in Deshaun's favor, but it's still going to be ugly.
When you're a really talented athlete, you sometimes have to create animosity. You have
sure.
to create people
sure.
against you, so it's you against the world. Deshaun doesn't have to create that. Oh, it is actually going to be him against the world.
Here it comes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would not be surprised if he played well. I mean, it being the first game, I just, you know, there's going to be some jitters and some shakiness, but the guys stepped up in these, like you said, different types of circumstances. All that was only football, but every time he's been put on a big stage, he has delivered. This will be the biggest stage he's been on in quite
sure.
a while. It'll
sure.
mean a lot to him personally. And you know, we can debate whether or not he should be playing and all of that, but there will be a game on Sunday and he will be on the field. So it's fair for us to talk about how he's going to play.
You know, it's funny. If he was a Major League Baseball player, he probably doesn't play again. But it's the NFL, so he's going to play again.
That one, I'll debate that one. I know people like to use that one because of a couple of cases. But no, there have been plenty. But I mean, times have changed. But there was a baseball player played for the Houston Astros in the mid '70s, Cesar Cedeño, who was involved with a murder woman and came back and continued to play. So
there's
no,
some off-field issues.
There have been plenty of those. There have been baseball okay. players who, you know, beat their wives on the streets of Boston, where the
Jeez.
Entire city saw it, and 911 calls being dialed left and right. He played for Philadelphia, and pitched the next day at Fenway Park and came to Houston and pitched for the Astros a few years later. So, no, it sounds like, and obviously we're in a different place now than we were
right.
5-10 years ago
right.
even. But no, I mean, people will always give a talented athlete another opportunity. I mean, they just will. I mean, Michael Vick went to prison, came back out, and kept running and throwing footballs.
Yep. If you can win, you can play.
We're yes. talking to Jerome Salomon here in studio. He's a senior columnist with the Houston Chronicle. So let's talk about the state of the Texans now. They are on track to have the number one overall pick, worst record in the NFL. When I've been to the stadium to see games this year, it felt like there were more fans for the opposing team than there were for the Texans
like
themselves.
The Chargers, when they moved to L.A., couldn't even fill that little stalker stadium.
They had a 20-year honeymoon.
Yeah.
I mean, every game
yes.
sold out for basically the first 20 years. It win or lose,
yep.
right.
the fans kept showing up. And I know that's a combination of Bill O'Brien and then COVID hit. And once fans got the idea, I don't have to go to these games on Sundays, they've decided not to go. And there's no reason to go. I mean, there's not, and nothing against some of the younger players or even the older players, the seats prices are still the same.
Yep.
And there frankly just isn't anybody on that team that you wake up and go, man, I can't wait to see him play today. They're all working hard. They're doing the best they can. And some of the younger guys might turn out to be Hall of Famers down the road. But there's no one that you go, I have to go see him play today. And so, that's where that number one pick that you mentioned.
Okay, so they're on track for the number one pick. But before that, they have a big decision to make about their head coach, Lovie Smith. He was not dealt a good hand this year, and it has not gone well. Do you envision that Lovie will be back next year?
I think he will be, just because of the circumstances. Because Nick Caserio, the general manager, stepped in, and the first decision he made was to hire David Culley as the head coach, someone who wasn't qualified.
Poor David Culley. He got stuck in this mess.
He'd been coaching for 40 years,
yep.
And forget that he'd never been a head coach. He'd never even interviewed for a head coaching position.
Right.
So no one thought he was head coach material except for Nick Caserio. Well, when you blow one that big and you have to fire him after one season, and now you replace him with a guy, you're going to fire him after one season? Nick Caserio would be putting his job on the line if he bailed on Lovie Smith that quickly, but he might have to. I mean, if you only win one game, Caserio has to stand there and say, well, either it was your fault, Lovie, or it was mine. And most of us would go, your fault. I'll take full responsibility for you not doing a good job.
Right.
So you gotta go.
Well, you know, Jerome, I do want to ask you about that, because I think that Caserio is not getting enough of the blame, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if I'm Lovie Smith and my NFL record up to date with Chicago, Tampa Bay, and Houston is 90-94, and then I laid an egg at Illinois in college, and I was 17-39 in 5 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year. And somebody says, I'm going to pay you this many millions and be the head coach. If I'm Lovie, I'm like, I'm all in.
Of course.
So I want to say, Caserio, it is time for you to take some responsibility, because you're in the second year of a massive, massive rebuild. As you just mentioned, terrible stumble with the David Culley hire. I don't see that the Lovie Smith hire is any better. And it's the situation that Lovie's been put in. And I think that Lovie is winning the press conference. He's ticking off all the media, and he's being talked about it. So, I mean, he gets salty. I don't blame him. They stink. But honestly, for Caserio, how much responsibility does he have to take for all of this?
Well, it's all his responsibility,
because he's
doing the hiring right there. Of course, Cal McNair is above him as the owner, but he's allowed his general manager to make these decisions.
Who wants to root for dysfunction?
No one does. That's why the press conferences are the most entertaining things going right now.
Yeah.
But the problem is, when you've run businesses, David, where you're paying people to not work, so they're already paying David Culley to not work, because you know, he only coached 1 year, and he had at least a 4-year contract. Generally, it's a 5-year deal.
They were able
to get him in for 4. I think Bill O'Brien, they got some offset because he moved to Alabama. But, yeah, he still had some time left on his. So now you want to just pay Lovie Smith to not work as well if you're Cal McNair. At some point, you're like, okay. And the problem is, if he just strictly blames Caserio and goes, I want to start all over, now you're paying him, too, to not work, because he has a contract that has some more years on it. So I think it's much more likely they stay status quo at least for one more year. But, man.
We'll be right back in just a minute. We'll have another moment with Jerome Solomon of the Houston Chronicle.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. And in studio with us is Jerome Solomon, senior columnist for the Houston Chronicle. Assuming Nick Caserio does stay, he has a huge offseason. Lots of salary cap money to spend. And the number one overall pick, plus Cleveland's pick for the Deshaun Watson trade, which will probably be about number 10 overall. So with that number one pick, everyone seems to envision they'll be drafting a quarterback. Do you think Bryce Young will be a Texan next year?
I see that. I when they get into the analysis part of breaking down these athletes, the pro scouts and teams really rip them to shreds from the end of the season, so 1st of January through the draft in March or April, whenever it is, and through the combine in February. He's a small guy. He's about my size.
I'm a little bit worried about.
There have not been a lot of great NFL quarterbacks who are built like him, but you can see how good he is. You can see how he plays, you know, but on the field, the guy delivers and he can play. I think they will eventually settle on him. And more importantly, I think the Texans have never been in this bad of a situation. I mean, the last couple of times they had the number one overall pick, they took a defensive end because that was the smartest move for them at the time. But they need a face of this franchise. They need someone that fans can, who they can root for. I mean, are you going to go buy anyone's jersey on this team right now? Not unless you're related to them.
No. That's a good point. I mean, we have just witnessed, you know, a 30-0 half at Miami. I mean, nothing. Mm-hmm. Not a point on the board. Their sixth straight loss. It is so difficult to find any positives in this team. It really, and I feel like Bryce Young probably will be the one to come to the Houston's if they have the Texans if they have the number one draft pick. And I feel so sorry for him because that line is not doing a good job right now. It should.
Yeah, the last two first halves.
Wow,
they've averaged about 8 inches per play. So and the football is like 11 inches long. So if you just laid the football down and turned it over,
Jerome,
they would get
stop.
More yards per play.
Crazy.
That's how bad it's been.
And they've got a lot of draft capital invested in that O-line.
Yeah, and those guys have not delivered.
Tensel's contract is huge.
And Davis Mills takes a lot of blame for his inability to step up and be great, but it was a wild shot in the dark anyway.
Sure.
You know, maybe he could turn to be a good
player. 13 games in college.
Yeah.
13 in 4 years because of injury.
But he was the number one quarterback coming out of high school, so he was anticipated.
Right.
And it was kind of one of those, hey, maybe this guy could find that lightning in the bottle and save us from having to spend a number one pick on a quarterback. But that's not the case.
Oh, man. This is rough. That's for sure.
We're talking to Jerome Solomon, senior.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Astros.
Let's shift gears to the Astros.
Because they've had a fun week.
They've got a new first baseman.
Yeah, the fun thing about the Astros is I've seen it on even social media. Now, the people are debating about next year's batting order. I'm like, you just celebrated a World Series championship. You
three
just had a
ago.
Parade. Can you go back and watch the replays of that? Don't start arguing about next year already.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, you know these sports seasons go on and on, but when you've had as rough of a run as Houston sports fans have had throughout history, not just recently,
sure.
I don't understand why they don't celebrate and enjoy it more. I mean, I just don't. I grew up here, was born and raised here. I never thought I would see the Astros win anything because they never did. And when they finally did, I'm not a fan as much as I was before, obviously, then, but it felt different. It was like, thankfully,
four trips to the
finally.
Paul Classic in 6 years just unheard of.
If you're not enjoying this as a fan, you just need to stop watching sports because you're never going to be happy.
I think it is, Jerome? That's a really good point. And I'm going to look at it in this way that there's nothing else to root for in this town right now. Well, no, that's not true. The U of H Cougars, we're going to get to that too because they are just a phenomenal story. And I love me some Kelvin Sampson. What
indeed.
He's done. Fantastic. But the Texans, as we've hit, are pitiful. The Rockets, hopefully they're on their way up, but they are very pitiful.
They're the
as
worst
well.
Team in the league right now as well.
And I think it's really cool to see what the Astros are doing. They are not resting on any laurels. They are like, yes, we won the championship. We are so excited, and we're going for it.
Let's get better.
Yeah, and that, let's get better.
Jim
How about
Crane,
that?
Jim Crane gotten criticized from day one when he came in, and I'm like, well. And they're like, well, his ego now is he wants to run the team. He has been running the team. He's owned it for 12 years, and he's delivered. He told you what he could do, and they've done that. To question any of their moves now is just it's just really
it's
premature.
Ignorance.
It's just, but it's,
yes.
It's, yeah, exactly. I'm like, if you can't celebrate this, what will you? And they're like, well, Jeff Bagwell's out there now. Jeff Bagwell's been advising him for 10 years.
Right. And Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, and Reggie Jackson's been there for the last 3 or 4 years in his ear telling him things. And Jim Crane, he's not your average owner either.
He's not
some guy who made his money in microchips and then decided to buy a baseball team. No, he played baseball. He played college baseball. He played at a high level. And he's been hands-on since he took over the team. I mean, he got rid of his other business to buy the Astros. Now, he's done some other business things with it, but he's been really involved in decision-making with the Astros. And if a guy is sharp enough to have hired a general manager that built a World Series team, then hired a second general manager that built the World Series team, and the same with two managers, and I'll trust his judgment on hiring the next general manager until I see some really bad evidence that he made a mistake.
Jerome Solomon of the Houston Chronicle in studio with us. So I want to ask you, what was your reaction to the signing of Jose Abreu? A 3-year deal, a pretty mature player at this point in his career.
He's been good for his entire life in the NFL. I mean, in Major League Baseball, 9 seasons has been great. Better than what the Astros have. The short answer is, they're better today than they were 3 weeks ago when they won the World Series. Because now they've added a veteran who, you know, extends their batting order. He's just
lineup's going to be scary.
And Eulie Gurriel is an excellent player.
I love Eulie.
He's fallen off a little bit. He's a great defensive player still. Played really well in the playoffs. But Jose Abreu is better. Yeah. I mean, he's just a better player.
Are they able to keep both? Use Abreu in the DH?
They're hoping to, but more than likely, where I see it, other teams will want Eulie more than the Astros, will want to keep him. And Eulie probably has some pride there, too. It's like, I don't want to come back and be a backup on a team where I've started for, the last 6 or 7 years and been really good. I'd probably want to go somewhere else.
That was my instinct, too, that we're likely to see him depart. Mm-hmm. Also, Justin Verlander, another case where other teams will need him more, presumably, than the Astros do. Do you envision Verlander will depart as well?
Yeah, the money is probably just going to be, astronomical for
upwards
a guy
of 40 million
at his age. Yes, and can't blame him for taking it because you're worth whatever they pay you, and that's going to be there. And I can understand the Astros not wanting to give it to him. But, man, he was really special this year. Now, it would be really horrible if they don't at least push hard and try to get him. Right. I know he and Jim Crane are really close. They play golf together. They've got a good relationship. But the money is going to talk there more than likely. And there's just too much other monies available for a Verlander to make it back. And he goes off, on a high. He finally got his World Series win. He got another championship. And he's enjoyed his
another
run with the Astros. And he delivered. I mean, he was hurt, came back, and had just a comeback player of the year and Cy Young victory, and they win it all. I mean, he doesn't owe Houston anything. Yep. He certainly doesn't owe them a hometown discount.
Well, I might beg to differ because we did pay him $60 million to basically not pitch.
I love it when they said that. We did. It wasn't my money.
That's right.
I had no problem with him making $60 million to rest up and come back and deliver like he did this year.
I mean, he had to have that. And the fact that he put in the work at his age to be able to come back and still play at that level is really impressive.
And I get it where fans go, man, well, he's made so much money to this point. He should just come into work for free. No, he shouldn't. He should make whatever he thinks deserves.
Bounty. But we've only got about 1 more minute with you, and I want to ask you about the University of Houston Cougars, their basketball team, number one, outstanding. And, of course, the fun thing is the Final Four is in Houston this spring. So will we see the Cougars deep into college basketball this year, celebrating here in Houston?
I think they will be in the Final Four, winning it all. I mean, there's some coin flips involved in that NCAA tournament, but Kelvin Sampson is one of the best coaches I've ever been around. I've known him for 25 years since I first started covering college ball. He's a genius at what he does and how he puts together his teams. He'd rather take a lesser talented player who fits into his culture and works hard and will play defense.
Clearly
it works for him. And those kids will not run through a wall. They will build a wall and then run through it for Kelvin Sampson. I mean, they're that dedicated. Being ranked number one as they are this week, that's going to be fascinating to see how they handle that kind of pressure. University of Houston hasn't been ranked number one since Phi Sillamma Jamma.
Exactly.
83. So, and that team didn't win at all.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. And I do want to talk to you about the Offensive Player of the Week last week, Josh Jacobs, your running back for your Raiders.
Woo.
He was on fire last Sunday, and he got the walk-off win for the Raiders. A fine, fine win. They won two in a row, a big win over the Seahawks.
Oh, it was so exciting, especially for me as a Raider fan. But you know what? This is what happens when you don't pick up the fifth-year option on a contract. They get motivated.
Well, yeah. Jacobs, of course, a rookie where the Raiders could have exercised a fifth-year option to have him locked up for next year, yet he's not. He'll be a free agent. So
he will.
He's earning himself a lot of money next year wherever he lands.
Yes, he is. I mean, that break-off 86-yard run was just absolutely incredible, and it set records for Raider Nation. And as we talked about a little bit in the break, it's not like Raider Nation has been bereft at the running back position. He has broken records that were set by Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen, and we're talking about really great people. So I love to see what's happening there. He had on Sunday 33 carries, almost 230 rushing yards, averaging basically 7 yards a carry against a Broncos defense that is actually really good.
Or Seahawks defense.
Seahawks, excuse me. A very good Seahawks defense. And so, you know what? I'm really happy with that. Yeah. I hope this is a big turnaround for Las Vegas.
Well, it was interesting to see Josh Jacobs' stats compared to other running backs in the league. He might be the best running back this year just in terms of productivity. He's outperformed Derrick Henry. He's outperformed Chubb. He is on fire right now with 1,159 yards and 5.4 yards per rush this season, leading all backs across the NFL.
And you know who loves Josh Jacobs more than anyone?
Who?
Josh McDaniels. It's called job security.
Well, yes. Good, I mean, gosh. Look, McDaniels has been on the hot seat. Raiders season disappointing. They're at 4-7 after coming in with such high expectations after adding Devontae Adams. There have been a lot of questions about whether Mark Davis would stick with Josh Jacobs, whether he would be a one-and-done coach. But it does seem, well, you don't want to overreact to two straight wins. Things could unravel from here. But if the team could win 6 out of 8 down the stretch as a way to finish the season.
Respectably,
and start to build some momentum, I think they could position themselves for a good next year.
I agree with you. I think at this point, you're not going to make the playoffs. And really, is it worth it at this point? Probably not. So just get your schemes in place. Get everyone comfortable with what you're doing. There's a lot of injuries. Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller. I mean, these are big playmakers for them. So, you know, I think it's going to be okay. And they see the Chargers, so it's not super favorable. But you know what? They almost beat the Chargers. They've had so many close games. That's the only thing that doesn't make me completely depressed, as if I'm a Raider fan, is because a lot of the games, other than New Orleans, have been incredibly close.
Yeah, they're 4-7. They could easily be 7-4, 6-5, and that would feel very
close
different
against
right
the
now.
Chiefs, close against the Chargers. I mean, they play good competition. Well, they have 2 wins against the Broncos, of course, so does everybody, but whatever.
So it's amazing how early speculation starts. Speculation about where quarterbacks will land. There's already speculation about where Aaron Rodgers might be next year. There's speculation about where Tom Brady might be next year. And I read this long article about how Tom Brady, of course, he'll be a free agent at the end of this year. Things haven't gone that well for the Buccaneers this year. I don't think.
Or him personally.
And I don't know that Todd Bowles has the vision that they need to run that franchise the way they'd like to run it. And so Tom Brady might well end up in a different uniform next year, assuming he wants to play. But I do think he's going to play. And the rumors were, or the thought was, he would go to the Raiders and reunite with Josh McDaniels, someone with whom he has a great deal of comfort, and that the Raiders would be willing to let go of Carr. Perhaps, well, they would have the right to trade him with a fair amount of draft capital. They would trade Carr, sign Brady, and reunite him with McDaniels, and the Raiders would be a different team next year. When I read that, I just continually feel like Derek Carr has been
disrespected.
It seems almost every year. Remember when John Gruden came in, everybody said, well, Gruden likes to pick his own guys, and Gruden this and that, and Gruden always likes the
and
next quarterback.
He's not excited that he bought a house next to him, you know, next to Gruden. I mean, it was
there
all
those rumors about Carr and Gruden, and now the same with McDaniels and Carr. And look, the team has struggled this year. I don't blame that on Derek Carr. He hasn't had his best season, but there were a lot of factors involved. There have been the injuries. There is a new offensive system. There is an adjustment cycle here. It's just surprising to me. Again, I feel like Derek Carr has not been respected at the level that he deserves.
No, I agree with you. Do I think he is an elite quarterback? No. I think he is a very, very good quarterback. And more than that, and really as the quarterback position, being the most important position really on the team, you know, the most visible. It is, to me, it is as important. The intangibles are as important as what you're seeing on the field. Obviously, as a signal caller and the passer and all the things, there's that. But leadership in your locker room is absolutely huge. And I think that's where Derek Carr has more than carried his weight. His team loves him. We saw him a few weeks ago crying in a press conference. I mean, that's how much he carries the weight of this team. And as we've talked about it many of times, we don't need to go into all the details, but to navigate that locker room and that team through the Gruden racial email debacle, the Henry Ruggs murder and felony charge. I mean, how many new coaches? He's had five coaches and five OCs, seven OCs in his nine seasons in with the Raiders. He has navigated beautifully through all of it. And remember, he was having an MVP season before he had his leg broken a few years ago when that was the first that led an open door for the Texans to get into the playoffs, which is shocking. But, you know, I think it's really important to see the quarterback role, how leadership affects it. Like, I'd love to get your take on how you feel Zach Wilson's leadership is going. If we're keeping with the Wilsons, look at Russell Wilson's leadership is going. Let's look at Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, I think Derek Carr, that really vaults him up there. On the field, he is great. He's not one of the top elite, I wouldn't say, but he is great, great, great. And I would be happy to have him as my quarterback. I mean, he is, so that's great. But off the field, he keeps that thing together and he's galvanized that locker room, much like Dak has done in Dallas.
Yeah, I think of Derek Carr as a top 10 quarterback, bottom half of the top 10, not that top five elite that we see with Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and he's certainly a great leader in the locker room.
He's probably in 5 to 10. He's somewhere in the 5 to 10 range.
You mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and what an interesting week we have now in Green Bay. Rodgers' world always seems turbulent, has been since he was pondering beautiful possibilities in the offseason, right? Here he sits with lots of injuries. He's all beat up, right? His thumb, his ribs, and the Packers have Jordan Love in their third season under the rookie deal. I think there's a lot of sentiment that maybe they ought to give Jordan Love a good long look here, see what they have with him. They're not going anywhere.
No.
Yet Rodgers says he wants to come back and play. If you were the Packers, would you consider sitting Rodgers down now and letting Jordan Love run the team for the rest of the year to really understand what you've got with this young quarterback?
Yes and no. Yes, because I get that. You're going to salvage the guy that you're paying $50 million a year to, and because they're not going anywhere. And he's already beat up, so why beat him up further and have him fresh for next season? Things are not going well with Aaron Rodgers. He threw how many interceptions on Sunday? Two? And I mean, I think he had three all of last year. It was something crazy. But I say no in the way, I mean, they won't do it because I don't trust the GM. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers will sit. And he makes more than anyone else in that building. So what he wants is going to go.
Well, that's right. And the way you're saying it, and as I'm hearing it and I'm thinking about it, is that Aaron Rodgers has become the biggest voice on that team.
100%.
And he has a voice with the general manager, clearly, because it was whispers that Gutekunst, he was going to get traded.
Yeah.
And that Gutekunst and he have had lots of conversations. And it's times it's almost felt like, who's the boss? Oh, it's Aaron Rodgers. And to bench a future Hall of Fame quarterback when he's saying, I'm healthy enough to play, would sound out huge bells and alarms, and Rodgers would go on Pat McAfee and make a big stink out of it.
It
will be a big, big PR problem for them.
Oh, I agree with you completely.
The alternative is also a big problem,
yes,
though.
Yes,
they
it
let
is.
Him play out this year and play it at a not very high level. They're not going to go to the playoffs.
He's going to get sacked. I'm just going to say that. This line is not doing
his job.
He's
going to take his beatings, and they're going to get to the end of the year, and he's going to be unhappy. He's going to grumble all offseason.
Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers grumbling? That's so
weird. It's going to be miserable
no
listening to him all offseason. He's going to complain that the resources, the teammates all around him were not good enough, and they really won't have any more visibility into how well Jordan Love can actually play on the field. Jordan Love finishing his third year. Now, he's a first-round pick, so they'll have the right to exercise his fourth-year option, but at a big price. That's about a $20 million price to exercise his fifth-year option. So they'll get him one more year next year as a fourth-year player where maybe they can get some looks at him next year before they make that decision. But it's going to be a really tough decision either way. They're bad problems either way. I guess the only way that it all works out is if Rodgers comes back out on the field and performs at a good level and they finish out the year strong, not enough to make the playoffs, but they build some momentum to believe that next year could be different, that Watson, their young receiver, is an ascending star.
Christian Watson,
they're going to be a team to reckon with next year. That at least they could plant the seeds this year. That's really, the only good outcome. If that's the only good outcome right now, then I guess they'll go back to Rodgers. But I would love to know what Jordan Love can do. He looked very good in a short sampling of last week.
He did. But you can tell every Packers game that I've watched this year, which has been many, there is so much consternation. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is so openly frustrated. You can see the F-bombs under his helmet and all the same thing. Yeah. So is Matt LaFleur.
Right.
So are the sideline guys. I mean, it's just there's a lot of bad juju going on in Green Bay. And I feel almost badly for Matt LaFleur because Aaron Rodgers, it's like he just is disgusted with him. And I'm like, hey, Aaron, he's disgusted with you, too. You're throwing picks like you're giving away, like, I don't know, Easter eggs. What the heck's going on here? It is so strange. It's a very publicly, it looks like a really dysfunctional situation that's going on in Green Bay. And clearly that's translating to the product on the field.
Mm. All right, I want to shift gears to a different quarterback who had an extraordinary week last week. Mike White stepping in and playing very well in place of Zach Wilson for the New York Jets, leading to him to a victory and performing at a really high level. Now, we've seen Mike White perform well in the past, but not a game like last week, and maybe a game that turned that Jets season around, because it looked like after the way Zach Wilson performed and Zach Wilson's press conferences and lack of accountability, and he was the presumed leader of that team, it just looked like the Jets were going to go back down the drain where they always do at this time of year. But Mike White might have saved that season.
Oh, my gosh. White for president. Let me tell you what. I give credit to two people for that Jets performance. And I was on a plane coming home from Thanksgiving watching that game. And I started taking notes for the show. And I said, oh, my gosh. My first notes were the Jets are having a ball. Like, they are having so much fun. That's the first thing. I mean, I grew up with the Golden State Warriors. When they're having fun, they are winning. I mean, Astros the same way. We're sitting here in Houston. It just is a different vibe. And when you're relaxed and loose and all that, I mean, Mike White, he energized that receiving crew. It was receiving core. It was so much fun to watch. And it was like the first time in a long time that the Jets have looked like they're having a ball, even though they've been winning. So I credit Mike White for coming in, I mean, stepping up, next man up, doing what he needed to do. I also want to credit Robert Saleh, because you know what? Here you are. You're a defensive-minded coach. Your QB1 is the second pick in the NFL draft. Okay, there is pressure to pick.
You bet.
I mean, obviously. But remember, he was a DC in Seattle. When Pete Carroll came to the Seahawks, I can't even remember who the quarterback was that they had given a big fat contract to. At that time, it was like $20 million. And they benched him for this third-round pick named Russell Wilson. And that is a gutsy thing to do as a fairly new coach coming in and saying, we messed up. We paid this guy, and he's our high draft pick, but we're putting in this other guy. And look what happened with Russell Wilson in Seattle. It was fantastic. Won a Super Bowl with him. I think Robert Saleh, as a new coach, first-time head coach, said, I've seen this before. I've got to go with the guy that's playing better, regardless of what their draft stock look like. And I really credit him. I think that the coaches are afraid to do things like that, i.e. Chicago with Mitchell Trubisky. You know, so I think credit to Mike White, fantastic game. He had 228 yards in the first half alone. Zach Wilson has 222 yards on the season. Mm. Okay. And then I credit Robert Saleh. So I thought it was the most fun game. I loved it. I thought it was great.
All right, when we come back, we're going to look at Trevor Lawrence's breakout game in his win over the Ravens. We'll break that down when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and I just had to highlight what Trevor Lawrence did last week. We've been waiting for the league's next phenom to show his abilities, and he led a great comeback win over the Ravens.
Over now, the Ravens.
Well, the Ravens, who have a good defense, but have been vulnerable to fourth quarter collapses. Right, all four of their losses were losing big leads down the stretch in the fourth quarter. But that said, what Trevor Lawrence did was exceptional. He was against a very good secondary. His stats were 29 of 37, 321 yards passing, three TDs, and zero picks. An outstanding performance, particularly down the stretch with the final drive. And, of course, they went for the two-point conversion and the win, and they finished on top 28-7.
I thought that was so exciting. It looked like Clemson Trevor, which I really haven't seen. I've seen flashes of it, but this was a complete game of Clemson Trevor.
There was a confidence and an authority on his passes that, you're right, looked like he was at Clemson. Last year, it seemed he was throwing off his back foot or he was indecisive about where to go with the ball. But down the stretch there, he had a fourth and five at the Jaguars' 30, their own 30, early in the drive, and he found Marvin Jones on a quick route to the left. I mean, he was converting on big down and distances. Really, really impressive. Just to play at that level and to play at that level against a good defense and to win at crunch time.
And Doug Peterson has to be happy with the advancement he's seen, the development he's seen with Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, what I was thinking earlier in the season was kind of a negative with Trevor Lawrence's calm demeanor was clearly a positive on Sunday. And I hope he can flip that in that way because he was fantastic.